The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Friday morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber with Jim Cramer, Carl Quintanilla, finishing a week off. Let's give you a look at the futures this morning, of course, as we get ready for the final trading session of the week. You can see we are set up for what would be a lower open. And our roadmap does start right there, as you see it, with those futures pointing to that lower open. But the Dow and S&P still on pace for what would be one of the best weeks since November of 2020.
Incredible.
Plus, President Biden and Chinese President Xi are set to speak this hour, and they will be discussing the ongoing Russia-Ukraine crisis, of course. Important phone call. GE CEO Larry Culp, he's taken a $10 million pay cut. That's in response to shareholder feedback. We're going to talk about that and the responsiveness of that GE board to what their shareholders
we're discussing, frankly.
Wanted. Yeah. But let's start with the markets here on this final trading day of the week, of course. A strong week, Jim, despite what may be some initial weakness today. And we say initial because we've all seen the volatility that can occur during the course of one trading day. Your thoughts on this final day of the week?
I think that today, that this week was a week where we were gratified. Now, I should say CEOs were gratified that maybe the inflation cycle can be broken. It started talking about 7 rate hikes. Most CEOs I talk to say, you know what, the idea that we have to endlessly pass on our costs means that our whole business will be devalued, our gross margins won't be any good. Now, there's a lot of regular people who watch the show, and they think that it's ridiculous that the CEOs want this. But I think that I am in the camp, which just says eventually everybody's purchasing power is eroded and just continues. So, you know, I'm with Jay. Am I a sycophant for Jay? I just think he's done a good job.
Did you listen to Steve's interview with Waller? Any thoughts on that?
I don't know. They're too focused on recession, not recession. David?
What do you want to be focused on?
What do I want to be focused on?
Yeah.
The defeat of Putin, and that the idea that what we need is we can't give in. The only truce must include that Putin resigns.
Must include Putin resigns?
Yes.
All right, well, the Ukrainians are going to be the ones who negotiate what we all hope would be some sort of a ceasefire.
Look, a lot of people feel that Yeltsin never recovered from the Chechen war.
You know, we're showing a headline here, Jim, that this is an important conversation that's going to be taking place because, of course, if the Chinese were to move to more overt support, certainly weapons or material of some kind, that could be a significant wrenching up in tensions between China and the U.S. It's a lot bigger trading partner of the U.S. than is Russia the EU.
I want vaccines for peace because China obviously does not have the correct vaccines. We do with Pfizer and Moderna. I know you looked askance at that proposition. The Russians have historically used artillery to decimate everything. That's always been their game, and they're doing that very effectively against many of the Ukrainian cities.
It's about the only thing they are doing effectively.
What they are doing effectively.
Their military campaign has been nothing short of a disaster, as you know.
Our country is not stopping it.
Yeah, but it's a disaster. Their logistics, their inability to get their conscripted soldiers to actually fight effectively. They've lost more generals and top commanders in 3 weeks. They've lost perhaps as many as 7,000.
It's almost
7,000 troops. That's according to U.S. estimates. Ukraine is far above that in terms of what they estimate.
It's very rare to see that number of generals. I mean, General I.D. Chernyakovsky went in, Russian general. The first guy went into Konigsberg. Very interesting. Stalin sent a Jewish general in, youngest general in the Russian army, made a statement to Germany. Unfortunately, he was killed in artillery. I do think that it's rather shocking that this many generals have been killed.
They were supposed to modernize their forces. Doesn't appear that worked as well as they thought it would.
No, the war's being prosecuted like the 1990-1994 Chechnya, not the one that Putin ran, 1999-2000, where he chose to level.
Right.
He leveled the capital city.
I think that's
what you'd like to do. The artillery is a little further from what we have sent them.
That's what's happening in that
city. People say, by the way, Jim, what do you know about war? This is what I was going to do. I'm going to be a professor of military history. They asked to be a professor. And I'm like, look, you can say, well, what does that matter? I spent my life on this. I write a lot about military. And it is rather amazing that the Russians still have not figured out how to use infantry, other than when they took Berlin, and they were willing to take unlimited casualties, which is what they would have to take if they actually went in to Ukraine, because their tanks can't put their guns low enough. The barrels won't go low enough. Anyway, enough on this other than to say that Biden needs to convince the Chinese to isolate, and then it would be the first war that was won by actual financial blockade. Some people feel like Neil Ferguson that Germany lost in 1918 because they ran it because of the bond market. This would be an incredible defeat for the Russians right now.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's an important call. It's one that we'll be monitoring. We'll see what we get on the readout.
Is it bad that we spent 3 minutes on what most people are talking about?
No, it's not, because it as we point out, every conversation you have, people want to get your thoughts of and or opinion on how this is all going to play out. And, of course, nobody knows
anything. That's what we talk about.
That's part of the problem.
I think you have to study the history of Eastern Aleppo.
You do.
Eastern Aleppo, they destroyed.
It can. But you know what? I do want to move on to the market. I do. And you got to let me. Will you?
Ice cream cone,
permission?
Diamond hands, right ahead.
This guy Kalanovic over at J.P. Morgan seems to be positive, points out this year is the fifth worst start for the S&P since 1927, but goes on to say Fed tightening remains the strongest headwind for the economy. He thinks the market still has upside. Not just for energy, but even maybe some growth names.
I thought that was a good
piece. Tensions could remain elevated, yeah, you think? Commodity supply shocks are so far less feared, and Europe is considering new fiscal measures to shore up its economy.
I felt that he's even talking about those joke stocks that came public in the last 600.
I know, right.
That's like, you know what those are? I call them the half-a-leg stocks. Remember half-a-leg?
Yeah.
That's what those companies are, half-a-leg.
All right, but what's your take on the overall? Because he does seem to have some influence, on some investors. People like to cite him as one reason why when we start to see,
it's fine that he's cited.
A bit of a rally.
I think it's fine that he's cited. I think that the market is remarkably resilient. I think that there were buyers all over the place on both destroyed growth names and growth names that have gotten through this period. The money seems to have come from banks, which are stalled, even though you think that with rate hikes, it would matter. We have every night a company that defines things. Last night was FedEx.
Yes.
This was the most impenetrable FedEx conference call I've seen in my 25 years of reading
Hold
FedEx
that
comments.
Thought. Let me tell people why, as we turn to FedEx, and you can see it right there, the stock is under pressure. It was a slight earnings miss. The bottom line was impacted by worker shortages that, of course, stemmed from the spread of the Omicron variant.
15%.
Also dealing with what Jim was talking about right at the top of the show, inflation. FedEx president and COO Raj Subramanian discussing those issues last night on the call.
What do you have? Clip?
Especially as the inflation has picked up, there's obviously consumer spending in February is already down. It's difficult to forecast in this environment, but I'm going to tell you that, you know, the big period of growth of e-commerce is now behind us, and we are planning, in that perspective. We are confident, even with the mid-single-digit growth to mid to high-single-digit growth that Bree was talking about on e-commerce, that we are able to generate positive returns going forward.
Right, Jim. Now, share your thoughts.
Okay, so I was trying to figure out when I was parsing this, I was thinking, okay, now, is he saying that the spend for great internet e-commerce traffic is over? Because in the next sentence, he literally says that he expects 3 to 4 years of excellent e-commerce. So if it's true that the spend is over and he expects 3 to 4 years of e-commerce, then you got to buy the stock. Got to buy the stock. But the convolution of what happened here made me wish for the old Fred Smith. He would come on, basically say, listen, we're doing well or doing not. This was when I finished it.
Yeah.
I finished it like at 10 o'clock at night. And I said, inconclusive. It was an inconclusive conference call. You know, to be done. Mm-hmm. TBD. Mm-hmm. There just was not enough in there to decide whether they really think that things are going to get better. They'd say ground is not doing as well. The inflation costs are bad. But the most significant thing was Omicron knocked off 15%. So let's see what happens when everybody comes back.
Yeah.
And so it's a work in progress. WIP.
I know other investors are also curious about succession at the company. That's a key issue. Subramanian was asked about that. You know, he talked about a number of different roles that have been taken on, including the appointment of Mr. Smith's son, Richard, right, who is now leading the Americas region. He was responsible for the vaccine distribution and planning of their global network in this, what this is his quote, our very interesting time that we've been through. They're confident Richard's going to take the organization to the next level. But there is a lot of focus from investors on some sort of real succession plan.
Perhaps it's Subramanian
that
Arthur
is expected
Smith.
To be the heir apparent. But there may be some shareholders who are not convinced of that, Jim.
Do you think Arthur Smith should be?
I don't know.
Heir apparent.
I don't know.
You know, Arthur Smith's the son of Fred.
Yeah, but what about, isn't...
Arthur Smith's the coach of the Falcons.
Right, okay.
No, I mean, he's a good coach. I mean, he's got a... I think he has to move on.
Yeah.
You know, he has to move on. The quarterback position. He had Calvin Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting guy. Ridley placed bets on games. Not That's unlike good. What you try to do in DraftKings after the first game, and then the second game, the app didn't work.
Right.
Anyway.
This is going to keep coming up, though. Not just FedEx's
results. No, it is,
results,
but you know what? I've
not just
it.
Questions about their ability to actually expand margins. And I've made this point before in terms of the size of the company and from a revenue perspective versus UPS, and then the respective huge gap in market capitalization for the
UPS,
two.
Which my charitable trust owns, Carol Tomei, had these costs better under control. But there is an upcoming next year union negotiation, which a lot of people feel is going to be one of the great tugs of war.
With UPS and its workers.
Yeah. And by the way, look, I don't cast aspersions on Arthur Smith, but I hope you play the Falcons.
Got it. Still have a good quarterback. He's been a great quarterback.
He's the highest paid quarterback. Well, I don't know. I mean, Aaron Rodgers discovered
DC
Devontae
guy,
Adams.
He's great.
It's like, hey, I'm the greatest guy. I don't need Devontae. Yeah, he's going to get the Rodgers rate, believe me.
A lot of people talking about that, too.
The Rodgers rate is finishing.
Why do you re-sign Rodgers and then let the greatest receiver go?
I don't know, but the Commandos got Carson Wentz.
Commanders, not the Commandos.
Oh, I thought they were going
They're not going Commando.
I thought they were the Commandos.
All right, after the break, we are going to talk about GE. Larry Culpit, CEO, agrees to a pretty big pay cut. This on
he saved the company.
Concerns.
He saved the company, and what does he get?
Oh, please.
Here's your hat. Don't let the door slam you on the way out.
Oh, come on. Yeah, he's got that 2020 award still in his pocket. Taking a look at futures as we head you to break there. He lost some weight, though. He does look good.
He did. Yeah. When I saw him this week,
yeah,
trimmed down.
Yeah, it looks good.
But he still hasn't taken a vacation since he got the job. But that's okay. He's not allowed to cut out that $10 million.
More Squawk on the Street, straight ahead.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I just wanted to ask a question about compensation. It's almost a year ago. The board decides your comp. We all know that. But Your shareholders didn't seem particularly happy with it. You know, almost a year ago, it was August, I think, 18th, they lowered your target performance share vesting from what was $12.40 to $6.67. There was a non-binding resolution of shareholders saying they opposed that. What do you tell those shareholders as to why they should not have done that?
Well, I think a year ago, David, the board extended my contract. I was honored to have the opportunity to be on this team when I joined nearly 3 years ago. And obviously delighted that the board has confidence in me to continue to lead the company into the future.
That was General Electric's chairman and CEO Larry Culp.
That was such a tough interview. I remember, didn't you fly
not answering
there?
A question from our interview back on July 27th. Of course, I'd asked him about his pay package. That was already a year earlier, but shareholders had voted against that at the annual meeting. It was specific to that compensation actions for 2020, Jim. I just referenced it in our brief conversation at the end of our last block of programming. And they did lower his award to 667. Now, remember, we've gotten the share reverse split
right there,
so don't even think about that number anymore. But the point is that the board was listening. And now, today, they say, after considering shareholders' feedback and a range of alternatives, the committee and Larry have agreed to reduce his annual equity incentive grant for 2022 from $15 million, as was provided in his employment agreement,
right, to
$5 million. It's a 67% reduction, and they basically say, we heard you, shareholders. We agreed to do this because we talked to a lot of their shareholders. In fact, they say they spoke to shareholders representing 52% of total outstanding shares,
right,
76% institutionally held shares, and they got the message that there was concern about that 2020 one-time equity award, how it was granted, and they said revisiting was unnecessary. Nevertheless, Larry will significantly reduce his total comp. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so I was with a gathering of executives not long ago, and we took a vote about his pay package.
Really?
Yes, about what he should have been paid.
No kidding. Okay. What'd you come up with?
The conclusive was that he deserved all the stock he could get since the company was going to go under if Culp didn't work, didn't fix it. Go under. I mean, vanish. Bankrupt without Larry.
You believe that to be
yes,
the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, unequivocally. The amount of debt they had, the hidden debt that they had, the long-term care that they had, what they had in what so-called their hedge funds, what they had in the, as you know, with their accounting, with Turbin's, which is the T-U-R-B-I-N-E-S, but they pronounce it like the thing that you wear, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it would have gone. And so Larry deserved it.
Okay.
And so did everybody. Everybody felt that. It was really rather extraordinary that everyone felt that GE would go.
And there are any number of headwinds he's faced since he took over as CEO. You can see the performance of the stock that have absolutely nothing to do, of course, COVID and the impact there, not to mention current concerns and what that has meant for, in particular,
for the aviation part
of the business.
Did you see what
and
Steve,
there is the plan to split the company. Of course,
people worried about power.
Coming, but still,
worry about power, right, worry about windmills.
Well, I can remember our first interview, of course, and power was not yet fixed. And,
right. And, no, and still, some people say it's still not fixed, but
right,
it's going to be investment grade, and that's what matters. They can play off. And Steve Tusa.
Still very negative on the
you
stock.
Know it's the white whale.
Yes.
It's Moby Dick.
J.P. Morgan analyst who was right for quite some period of time and refuses. I shouldn't say that. He continues to be negative on GE's prospects.
And, you know, he's like, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he says he has even higher conviction that the company's not doing well after the analyst day. He's using well below numbers for estimates for EBITDA. And, Dave, this is my favorite. Some of the parts, minus 25% from where it's trading. He literally thinks that they are shrinking to shrink.
To shrink.
Yeah.
Now, can I tell you, the market response to the split announcement has not been pronounced at all.
No. And, by the way, J&J's, everyone felt that J&J, the announcement wasn't that much.
What's that?
Starting to look better now.
What are you doing?
I got the label there. Let me get this.
No, don't do that.
You'll pull the whole thing apart.
Don't.
Gee, what count is this? It's a Super 200.
It's an interesting example, though, as well, of companies that are listening to shareholders. It's a non-binding resolution.
It was a slap,
say no,
David.
To pay.
It was a slap.
But in this case, GE's board did listen at least a couple years later.
And name me a CEO you think is underpaid.
I'll get back to you after the break. Will you think about your mad dash, please?
I'm going to try to game it. Will you stop it?
No, I won't.
Okay.
I think we know what's coming up. Take a look at futures. A lot more Squawk on the Street after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Let's get to a mad dash. I think Jim gave you a preview as to what we're going to talk about. It was the original meme, it reported earnings.
Well, David, I am fortunate enough to have been privy to the actual game plan that they unveiled. And I'd like to just show you, because I think it's very representative of what to think about GameStop. Now,
so you believe GameStop is lighting money on fire?
Yeah, I do. Now, David, they negative cash flow of $110 million compared to an inflow of $164 million. They still have, they raised the back on the backs of people who didn't know anything. They raised $1.67 billion. They've not been able to go through that. The revenues have been flat for the last 3 years. They still have $1.27 billion in cash. But, David, they're going to move aggressively into the NFT marketplace, which we know is so important. They still owe. Just for the record here, they clean up most of the balance sheet.
Yeah.
They still owe $40 million to the French.
Okay.
So don't forget that. And they hired dozens of individuals with experience in areas such as blockchain. I think that's important. Gaming, that's always good. They did pick up Lenovo and Corsair Gaming as customers, as suppliers, which is very good. And David, most importantly, they had a conference call and there were no questions allowed.
There weren't.
No. They got a guy who always reminds me of a horse race. His name's Furlong, Matt Furlong. He finished 18 furlongs behind anybody. He was worse than Poseidon's Warrior or Mainstay.
What is an appropriate price for this stock, Jim?
Well, look, it's if they actually
give me a number. Just go out there and do it. Just tell me.
I don't know. I said it was it could be worth 25 if they get it right.
25. Okay.
Well, because gaming is still hard. Yeah. By the way, the PlayStation's still really hard to get. Thank you. Thank you, Matt Murphy from Marvell, who told me that this week. It's still a very hot area. But, David, 3 years of flat revs, okay, losing money. I see better fish to fry.
Wow.
I see better dollars to
see the background there. That's
so good. That's kind of I haven't seen the movie yet.
We're going to use that again. I kind of like that effect.
Well, no, because no one else has burned it like that.
Well, no, but we may run into another company that's made a decision to do that.
When I do this, actually, David, because I'm from Philadelphia.
Yes, I know that.
I never threw a battery at Santa.
Good.
Or the Eagles, but snowballs, bingo. Hey, listen, they had a bad year.
Particularly when the Commandos come to town.
Commandos look good this year.
We've got an opening bell a few minutes away. Stay with us. Yeah, there it is. We got a minute before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange. You and I occasionally like to do something called Key to the Market. It dates back 20 years ago from our early days
22.
On Squawk Box together when I'd ask you a similar question or Mark Haynes would. So what is the key?
I like to be a little more... abstruse. Today there's a call, Focus One List, Citi, for a company called Lam Research.
Lam Research.
Now, we still have this giant chip shortage. People always talk about Pat Gelsinger as the man who is addressing it. If you want to address the chip shortage, you need equipment from Lam. I think Lam's numbers, the estimates, are the lowest versus what the company's going to come out with. So watch LRCX, the number one capital equipment play for semis, to see whether we will have growth in semis. Right now, we're short semis. The biggest problem in America right now for supply, semiconductors. Lam is the solution.
There it is, the opening bell here at the New York Stock Exchange. We take a look back at our real-time exchange at headquarters. Given that, at least what we've seen in futures, probably a little more red going to end up there. Here at the Big Board doing the honors is the online real estate marketplace Property Guru celebrating its listing via SPAC. Over at the NASDAQ, we've got decarbonization company 5E Advanced Materials celebrating a listing. By the way, not seeing that much activity when it comes to initial public offerings, even
no,
as SPACs
but here's something
yesterday, a few being pulled as well.
Ben Stoto is doing work, my researcher
and
partner, and he said they're turning up. The SPACs. Stocks are turning up.
Stocks are turning up. The SPACs themselves. That may be the case. I mean, they don't have far to go.
No.
To zero, many of them.
No.
So,
one of the amazing things is stocks do stop at zero. Always found that to be encouraging.
True. Well, that's why you own them. When you're short them, there's no end to your losses.
The SPACs are a little hockey stick-like, but they're rallying. And I think that's
look,
important.
That's true. The post-SPAC index yesterday was 59. It's up to 60 today.
Look at that.
Yeah.
I smell a bottom, David.
but they continue, and this obviously is a deal that was done.
David,
and they
can you tell me what's really going on in MGM here?
What do you mean?
Where we are with that deal?
It's done.
So
closed.
So why did it? No, but I'm saying, remember you said that it could still be
a problem? The FTC could still challenge it. Remember,
okay, so
the FTC has reserved the right to do so. The FTC is two commissioners, two Democrats, two Republicans. They're still waiting for the fifth to be appointed. It could be 3-2, and then they could make a decision to challenge the merger.
Okay, so people asked me about
that. But
Amazon
has already completed it. Doesn't mean that they aren't potentially going to be challenged.
Like people said, Jim, could you ask David about if a deal's closed, how can it be?
Still can. You're doing it at the you're choosing to close the deal at the risk of it being potentially challenged. Obviously, in this case, Amazon doesn't feel that's likely. The EU gave its approval. As we've said many times, it's unclear what law the FTC would be relying on to actually argue that the deal is itself anti-competitive. But we know Lina Khan, of course. Remember, she rose to prominence as a result of that paper she wrote when she was at Yale about Amazon's dominance, broadly speaking.
Right.
And so there continues to be a question as to whether, when they do get that fifth commissioner appointed, whether they may revisit this transaction and or at least try to do something to sue to say, hey, you got to reverse it.
Right.
Again, is it likely? Probably not. But it's certainly a risk that Amazon has been willing now to take. They own MGM. That does raise an interesting question, though, Jim, which is with this close of the MGM deal, how many other assets are out there in the world? You know, as I reported, Apple did take a look at MGM. They were the cover bid, I believe. They were well lower. There were others that were well lower. Amazon came in with a very high price. But now, what other assets are out there that you can really help with your streaming service? If you're Netflix, for example, and you say, you know what, we'd love to keep broadening. We'd love a studio. What's out there?
Microsoft
question.
Truly got Activision Blizzard, and that deal's going to be a while.
Yep.
But I thought that was a brilliant acquisition.
Yeah. Now, again, that comes down to antitrust, a continued concern there, although many people believe ultimately Microsoft will prevail, but it will take a long time to do so. But, you know, Viacom is still out there, obviously controlled company, but with Paramount and Paramount Plus.
But there's all cottage industry people talking about Viacom.
Netflix be looking at doing something to bulk up their offerings. We've got Discovery Warner about to close. Let's call it less than a month from now at this point, probably a month from now. That's going to be fascinating to watch the growth of that service and what they're going to do. There's a look at AT&T shares, which they just don't really like to go up, do they?
Well,
it's going to be a pure wireless play very soon. It is being valued that way. They just had their
investor
day. I just
feel uncomfortable
talking
about
the company.
They gave
us some of their new projections in terms of cash flows, you may recall. Down in 22, but back up in 23. The way that they're actually, formulating EBITDA now, and or they're including certain things in CapEx that they hadn't done previously, including...
Well, let's back up. And what this is about to me is to say, look, if you're in a... Someone called, one of our callers said last night...
On Mad Money,
yes, I'm in the stock because of a takeover. Because it's so low, it'll be a takeover.
What name was this?
I don't know, general,
right.
Very small stock.
Yep.
And I said, that's not why you can own stocks here. That is a prop that does not exist. You can't own a stock because you're hoping someone's going to bid for it. Not right now. Not with this regime. That's fool's gold.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a small company, the chances are it's probably not going to face an antitrust review. But by the way, the level of M&A it's not gone, but this volatility in the market certainly makes it difficult to think about doing something. The drop overall in equities may make private equity even more aggressive. We know, for example, that Nielsen deal has been reported on as a possibility.
Right.
Might even be a club deal, which we haven't seen in a long time, given the size of the equity check. Kohl's continues to be a name
I was going to ask you about
that is
Kohl's.
Getting.
Where
I don't have
we?
A lot of information
this
on Kohl's.
This weekend's business, Kohl's?
Other than to say, you know, if it goes to private equity, you need to debt. I mean, the history of retailers going private is mixed to be kind.
Yes. Burning bed, my friend.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mattress. But beyond that, I mean, you know, Macy's, remember Federated? The old. I mean, you can go back and there's a lot of them that didn't go well.
No.
That said, KKR, what was it? It was Dollar General, right? That was a
Dollar
good one.
General. I remember speaking with them. They said, look, you know, they bought in public. They bought it during a cycle where people didn't like those stocks because the economy was good. And then when the economy softened, they bought it public. It was all brilliant textbook. And Dollar General, now, after this run, people are starting to get worried about it, saying that the consumer's getting softer. Well, that's wrong. When the consumer's getting softer, you buy Dollar General. The analysts, look at this. They were all saying get away from it. What do they know? My Dollar General had, admittedly did not have much inventory. It looked like, frankly, a Russian department store.
Or, yeah, so like we used to say, when I lived in Washington, D.C., there was the Soviet Safeway. There was nothing on the shelves. Yeah. That's where Putin wants to go back to.
Remember with Hagway? Remember that Hagen deal they put together at the FTC?
But there's another one. I mean, a lot of these don't, you know, Toys R Us, that didn't go very well. So we'll see what happens with Kohl's. Value of the real estate there. By the way, keep an eye on the financing markets. There's no big hiccup going on there, but certainly there might be an unwillingness to fund certain things without perhaps a little more equity. Either take it out in price or, you know, increase the equity. As you take a look at the broader markets, Jim, it's been a strong week. I do want to get back to Waller, who Steve Leisman had on Squawk Box a little while ago.
It's depressing.
Well, all right. Yeah, maybe you
well,
feel.
Well, I mean, we talk about COVID. This is
what he had to say in terms of what.
Let's listen to the soundbite.
Okay, let's do that.
And the data is basically screaming at us to go 50, but the geopolitical events were telling you to go forward with caution. So those two factors combined pushed me off of advocating for a 50 basis point hike at this meeting and supporting the 25 point hike that we enacted. So going forward, that'll be an issue whether to think about going 50 in the next couple of meetings or not.
50 and 50, pretty soon you're getting to some real numbers.
If you were listening to the American Express call, I think you would say that they should have gone 50 because how strong the consumer is. If you listened to the Lennar call yesterday, I think you could say they should have gone 50 because the demand is incredible for housing. They're raising prices of housing furiously. If you listen to any of the plastics and minor board calls, you would wish that they would go 50. There are many businesses, the paint business, there are many businesses right now where we must break the cycle of you have to pay more because we paid more.
Right.
That's called endemic. It's in there.
It is.
I could argue 50 easily. But Jay Powell correctly said, hey, listen, we're going to keep doing it. Why you have to do 50
and
now?
He has to
end this Hollywood Squares game where he has 19.
I know you hate the Hollywood Squares.
All he has to do is take 10 questions. Call Reed Hastings.
I know. You make a lot of suggestions. I don't know that anybody takes them, but you make a lot of them.
None. None are taken. But offline, they all say, I wish we could take it, but then it would look like I took it from you.
Doesn't stop you, though.
Thanks
but geopolitical events were telling you to go forward with caution, is what Waller said. And you can
understand.
What,
did you go out with recklessness?
You can understand
we should be
why
reckless.
That would be the case, given what is
taking
place right now.
If you listen to the conference calls, it's clear that there's way too much inflation in the system. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
FedEx today being another example of it, right? Wage inflation and or also the other side of things.
But when you lose 15% of your workforce to Omicron, if you're Jay, you want to see what happens when the endemic, David, can I just say something to you?
Please, anything you want.
The purpose of going to the office, I had Laura Albert on yesterday.
From Williams-Sonoma, CEO.
Hybrid is forever. And that changed the economy. That made it so that it's very difficult to game the economy because it meant that you can work out of your house. That's why tractor supply keeps going up. I'd recommend it again today. It's why we need more cars. David, who would have known? Do you think Jay Powell had the vision to say, you know what? People aren't going to go to Goldman Sachs anymore during the week. Are you kidding me?
No.
Who thought that?
Very few. It's been 2 years now. And as you say, I think there's no doubt that hybrid work is the way it's going to go.
I mean, you're looking at two people who are not hybrid workers.
Headquarters of which is not too far from here. People are showing up most 4 days a week. I mean, most of the financial services companies. Three to four. Fridays, today?
No, they don't work.
Nah, they
don't
work. They work from home.
Oh yeah, they work from home. Yeah, what do they do? Well, they work from home.
They're not showing up on
Fridays. They're in, like, when they're in Zoom, it's like, hey,
And we still
they,
haven't,
they work in Zoom just long enough to be able to say that they're on Zoom.
We still haven't seen how this is all going to ultimately play out. There's still the question of you come to the office and then your other colleagues aren't there and you're getting on Zoom calls to talk to your other colleagues. What's the point of that? So you need to figure out how to get everybody together at the right time so that you can have cultural attachment. You can have the mentoring that you need and so many other important components and things that are more difficult to measure as well, Jim, about the benefits of coming to the office. But it doesn't matter what we may have thought about that. No. Hybrid, as you just said, that's the world now.
One of my CEO contacts said that they surveyed other CEOs. The people who are in their 60s, they want to come back every day. The 50s, they want to come back every day. 40s. But when you get to the early 30s and late 20s, these are people who just say, make me.
Well,
just try to
young
make
children,
me go to the
If
office.
You have a young children at home, it makes it much easier sometimes, particularly if there's daycare issues, to not have to leave the house, certainly on certain times.
This is work.
But the young 20s or the early 20s, well, I don't get that at
those
all.
Are people,
that
I mean,
one I don't get at
David,
all.
The average length of time, this that, is that from I, someone who has 300,000 employees.
Yes.
2.5 years of this. 2.5 years. You teach them. You give them all their blood, sweat, and tears. And what do they do after 2.5 years? They go to a competitor. You think that's right? Do you think it's right?
No, but that, yes, I think it's yeah. perfectly the option of the employee to choose what to do what they want.
What,
absolutely.
Why? No,
too
they,
bad. But that's why you need to get them in the office, get them attached to things other than their screen.
Right.
But they want flexibility.
But give them breakfast, lunch, and dinner? What do you give them?
Maybe the relationship changes over time. Maybe jobs become more scarce and, more plentiful, and therefore the employee does not have the power that they do right
so
now.
So what did... The employees have tremendous power.
Jobs are plentiful. You know what I mean. That there's
right.
less
no, but there are people who, right. in 2 years, I mean, it was 5 years from it. It's a disgrace if you leave before 5 years. Now it's not a disgrace if you just work 2 years. Of which, by the way, the first 9 months are really being trained.
Correct.
So all you're doing is being trained to work at another firm. I think it's disgusting.
It's the way it is.
It's not right.
Well, it doesn't matter what you think. It's the way it is.
Like you're saying, like, it's not right that Devontae Adams had to leave. I mean, you know, it's like not a...
You just love football. You love football so much, don't you?
I sent next to Adam Silver the other day.
He's basketball.
He's brilliant.
Yeah. You also sit next to Kraft, too. He's football.
I sit next to the power players.
You do. I mean, you know, they had me at some table way in the back.
Oh, my God. You were like, I couldn't believe who you were with.
You didn't even see
me. I mean, you were like, I had to, like, Google your table.
No, I was alone.
Yeah, Google your table.
I was alone.
And most of your people were not in Google, by the way. Not even Wiki.
Let's get back to the markets and also back to some of the other concerns. You know, COVID is spreading pretty quickly in Europe again.
I know.
Hong Kong, by the way, is in the midst of a horrible, horrible pandemic right now. Deaths. They don't have enough of their over 80s vaccinated in Hong Kong. There are questions about China and what will be there. The death rate in Hong Kong is very high. But we've got this new variant off of Omicron spreading in the UK again more aggressively. And Moderna says everybody should get a fourth shot.
I can't get confirmation from my doctors that a fourth shot's right. But then again, the CDC is not allowed to tabulate things. They have no authority to tabulate. The doctor who runs CDC said that. It's going to be revealed again this Sunday in 60 Minutes.
They have no authority to tabulate?
They can't get the data from state to state. They don't have the authority.
Well, I see what you mean. They can't actually take
right.
the data
from every
state.
Right, so a lot of people feel state. The CDC has dropped the ball. The CDC does not have the authority to tabulate the information. I don't know, David. I mean, to me, in the end, what matters is that Adobe may not do as well as people think. Charlie Morrison quits Wingstop. Got a double buy to sell from Piper's Nicole Miller Regan, whom I like very much. And then J.P. Morgan revealed the Fab Five. The Fab Five.
Tell me, okay. Who are the Fab Five?
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Amazon.
Microsoft.
Google. Salesforce. And ServiceNow.
That's the Fab Five.
That's the five. Yeah, that's a Fab Five.
All right.
Yeah, kind of like Michigan, right? The Michigan team.
Yeah.
You know,
that was a great team.
That was a great team.
They didn't win the championship, though.
No, they didn't, because the timeout was
and
called
Weber,
incorrectly.
Right? Didn't he call the out?
He's not fair. He's been living that down.
No, it's totally not fair.
It's been living it down forever. But anyway, that's the Fab Five. Those are the ones. Look at that. There it is. The Fab Five. It's Amazon. Amazon.
While Jim tries to figure out a way to pronounce that, let's get to Bob Pisani.
Right, AMAS. It's AIR amassing the five.
Who has more thoughts for this for us on this market? Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. About even on the advanced decline line, my heavens, this is just choppy trading. You can't make a lot of conclusions about where we're going based on this week's trading. It's a quadruple witch today, by the way. We're going to get very heavy volume. Take a look at the sectors. You notice something odd? China and ARK tend to move together recently. One's up, the other's up. These are high beta names, so it makes some kind of sense, but it is funny to watch that. Energy's down this week, topped out, but remember, oil's still 102, 103, so still has the potential to move to the upside. Banks, okay, not great. Tech's up a little bit this week, so you want to keep an eye on that. The downside leaders, ping pong balls, airlines, just up, down, all over the place, depending on the sentiment, down today. Regional banks, same thing, flattish yield curve. 10-year moves up a little bit, they go up, flattish yield curve, they go down. Industrials, again, up and down. Cummins goes up and down with the wind. Just very hard to figure out. The main story is inflation. What's the story and how can you construct a model? And it's really hard. And that's the big problem. Look at FedEx, what they said. This is not good for the global economy here. Margin pressure due to labor headwinds I'm seeing here. Lower volume, inflation pressures at independent contract delivery partners for FedEx. So we got lower volume and higher inflation likely to continue. Well, that's an issue. That's not a good sign for those hoping that inflation's going to just moderate or go away in the second half of the year. This is the kind of stuff that you want to look for. I keep waiting for when the big pushback against the higher prices is coming. I said a couple of weeks ago, I was in Miami and in Key West. I was astonished at the prices and people tweeted and said, well, why don't you stop going, Bob? Maybe that would help. And they're right. So how about a pushback? Carvana already has said they're getting pushback because higher prices, 30% higher higher car prices. People are starting to walk away. Carvana said that 2 weeks ago. Gas is the highest since 2008. Mortgage rates are the highest since 2019. I met one of the biggest mortgage brokers in Philadelphia yesterday. He said they're having problems getting quotes to people because the intraday quotes on mortgages changes all the time. So that's an issue. He's concerned about the higher prices. People are starting to complain about it. We haven't seen any pushback yet on the airlines, on the hotel rates. I keep waiting for that to happen, but everybody wants to go out. So maybe that's a later spring, early summer pushback. But these are going to be stories you're going to be hearing about within the next few months, I predict, the pushback. Meantime, as far as trade in the market in 2022, it's just all over the place. One thing that's very clear, value is killing it. So anything related to value is generally flat to down. Anything related to growth is generally down. Growth's down 12%, but that's basically technology. So there's growth, S&P down 12%. There's S&P technology down 13%. So there's the main trend that we're seeing so far this year. Commodities are still the big movers. Look at the DBC. That's the Invesco Commodity Index. This is a great index of 13 or 14 commodity futures. These are commodities. That's a big winner. And of course, the energy XLE, huge winner, up about 30% as well. That's still a big trend, although they topped out the last week or so. That's been a big story. Banks are having a tough time because the yield curve is being flat. KBE, that's about flat right now. So keep an eye on that. Finally, I just want to mention here, retail sentiment, David, horrible. 22% bullish at American Association of Individual Investors. That's terrible. It's half what it is. 50% bearish? That's almost twice as much as what it normally is. Remember, these are really good at extremes. Sentiment at extremes, really good. And this is pretty extreme right now. David, we're in out of that trading range. You see that? 41.50 to 43.50. We're now out of that range. And I think the market message this week, post-Powell, is it's too soon to panic about the Fed tipping us into some kind of recession. That was the fear. Powell kind of went at it directly, and the market's trying to act right now like it's a little too soon to worry about recessionary concerns. David?
Certainly seems like it. Bob, thank you. Bob Pisani. As we head to break, let's stop for a moment here and give you the bond report. We'll take a look at how Treasuries are faring this morning. Of course, figures prominently in a lot of things we've been talking about this morning, and as you can see that 10-year, which is what we tend to focus on, 215. That is certainly 1 week. It's moved up in terms of yield, down in price, of course. And keep an eye on the spread there as well between the 2-year note and the 10-year note. That's something that people like to watch closely. We're right back after this. There they are, the top performers right now. This morning.
That's because people are buying my vaccines for peace.
I don't think that's it. I think it's because they asked for a fourth shot.
The president's talking right now to shit.
Yes,
right
he
now.
Is. The important phone call going on between President Biden and President Xi. And as soon as we get the readout on it, we will be sharing it because it could have a market impact as well. We're back after this. All right, Jim, what do you got on Matt tonight?
Vacasa is a company that's run by Matt Roberts. He made a fortune for people on OpenTable. It's kind of a competitor to Airbnb. I want you to have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And I know that when I Googled the people at your table, because they, let's just say, they seemed like nice people.
They were very nice, and I had a great time.
We are talking about the great service.
We had a great dinner the other night, lots of people there. Obviously, he was at the table of honor, and I was.
David, a lot of high growth stocks that have not done well are doing well today. Just be aware of that because of that piece that you mentioned.
Yeah, a lot of it. Yeah, Nasdaq turning positive. You see right there.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
People today can spend half their lives over 50, so it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.